Have we seen a champion chase winner? Why a top trainer has said the sport is no longer financially viable? And where are the female jockeys? Find out all of this and more in this week's Front Page. Hello and welcome to the Front Page, the Racing Post show, looking back at all the hot topics in the sport. And we've got an action-packed show for you to look forward to, especially after a phenomenal week. And Sandown, there for us was Lewis Porteous, who joins us in the studio. Lewis, just before we get stuck into the action at Sandown on the weekend, how was it from a reporting side? A really good crowd and busy there?
Yeah, pushing 11,000 on the Saturday, James. Real sort of Christmas atmosphere. And I think the people there really got the money's worth with some quality on show as well.
As I'm sure we're going to dissect in detail. And we've got eyes and ears everywhere, including in the north, where Matt Rennie will be joining us remotely. Matt, you've had eyes across the action. I can't wait to get stuck into it. But anything away from Sandown that potentially took your eye before we get stuck into the Grade 1 action?
I mean, yeah, luckily I could have eyes and ears everywhere at the weekend. I was doing the remote report from Chepstow, and we looked like we possibly had the Welsh Grand National winner in the trial again come from there. Or did we have him in the beat to chase at Aintree? Mr. Vango ran an absolute stormer in that race over the national fence. It was a great spectacle across the whole weekend, across the country.
Yes, it certainly was. Let's go to Sandown, where, of course, the Tingle Creek was the highlight. And I suppose the talking point might not, Lewis, have been necessarily Ilite Tomps, the impressive winner, but the return of Willie Mullins. He's back on these shores. Just tell us what you thought of the winner, Ilite Tomps, first.
I couldn't help but be impressed, really. He put two very good horses in, John Pond and Lotus Sud to the Sword, relatively easily, really. They had a good set two down the back, and it shaped up lovely, but from the last two, he really stamped his authority on the race. He looked every bit as good as he did in the Celebration Chase last season. To me, he should be the rightful market leader now with the champion chase in mind. The one little question mark with him is his form at Cheltenham, but this is a totally different horse to the one that was running around in Triumphs and Supreme Novices a few seasons ago. He's really grown up. He's gone from being sort of a headstrong hurdler to, you know, efficient chaser. He's not Larry. He just gets the job done. You can ride him from front or behind, and to be honest, I wasn't completely sold going in there, but I came away from there thinking that, I mean, that's a genuine champion chase horse.
Serious performance.
It was very good. But the thing that makes it exciting is that he hasn't done it at Cheltenham yet, so it's not all done and dusted by any means. But as a marker, you know, that sets the standard so far.
Certainly does, and there's something quite poetic, isn't there? Because of course Sandown was the place where Willie Mullins has stolen the title from Dan Skelton, and in many ways this is where it started this year's campaign, going for the hat-trick.
Yeah, we've been waiting, haven't we? We've been waiting and waiting all season for him to sort of spring into action. I think he was 0 from 9 runners so far. Had an awful Hennessy day, sorry, Coral Gold Cup day at Newbury. Things didn't go to plan in the fighting fifth. And all that time, Dan's adding more and more pounds. And he led by 1.7 million on Saturday morning ahead of Willie. So it was a first sort of strike for Willie, a first bite into Dan's lead. It's a hell of an amount of money he's got to make up, but you could see it start snowballing now.
Certainly would, and winning the champion chase would certainly help that. Matt, what were your versions of Ilite Tomps? Would he be a champion chase winner for you, 11-4 favourite as it stands?
If you'd asked me that in April, I'd have probably said no, but after Saturday, I'm more along the absolutely lines he is the one to be. I just love him. I've loved him for a while. In terms of he's tiny, he's a little pocket rocket, isn't he? I'm sure now that he's, as you say, he's the complete package in terms of he settles, and Paul Tannen said it on Saturday, he can ask him for a big jump now and he'll deliver, whereas two seasons ago he wouldn't do that. So he's been learning all the time. Scarily, there's still progression to go, and he might be like riding a motorbike around Cheltenham, would just slip on the inside rail and get through those gaps where other bigger horses can't. Look, if it goes through Ilite Tomps, you go fair play. He's miles head and shoulders above the 2 mile chasing division at the moment. We still do have Marie National to come back, and we know how good he is around Cheltenham as well. I think you can say at this point the 2 mile division at Cheltenham and beyond is going to be dominated by the Irish at this stage, compared to just how easily Ilite Tomps brushed aside Lotus Sud and John Bond.
Yeah, exactly. And you touch on the Irish strength there, Matt. I mean, we saw Mashburn on the weekend. Not the result that Willie Mullins would have been hoping for. Didn't jump particularly well, but look, he's still clearly got loads of talent, hasn't he? Just needs to brush up his jumping, I suppose.
Yeah, it's an absolute humdinger of a performance, really. And immediately afterwards, I was like, wow, he did so well to get as close as he did on his comeback, giving weight away to a good grade two horse in Found 50. That's his level. It was his pinnacle yesterday. And he showed he's still got a massive engine. But the huge concern for me is his jumping. And it was his kryptonite at Cheltenham last year when a lot of people fancied him for the Arkle. I couldn't have him for a champion chase or any 2 mile chases at this time. Or even any chases brutally until he really brushed up his jumping. You know, he was really airy at the first two fences, but then he was fiddling him through the back and then absolutely belted the second last. There's many theories as to why Majbra is doing it. I think the most plausible is there's a lack of concentration there completely in his head when it comes to obstacles. And, you know, where have we said that this season already with Constitution Hill and stuff? But I just fear that that's going to be a real detriment this season, especially if they're going to keep him in the 2 mile chasing division where your jumping has to be on the A game at every fence. I think it's why he looks like a horse that's got a quite unique constitution and build. He's very leggy. He's got really long legs, and it looks in a way to me that he maybe hasn't filled out the frame as horses have gone on to do before, and as such, he's not getting the power to go over those fences. And with that and the mindset, I think he's got currently, I think he's. I would be quite confident in saying Majbra was going to find it a bit of a struggle this season. I know I'm happy to be shot down if he does go and bolt up at Christmas and in the Dublin Chase and whatnot, but I'm quite fearful that it's going to be a disappointing campaign for him.
Okay, we'll wait and see, Matt. This is the wonder of racing, isn't it? We find out if we're wrong or right. But I agree with you about the concentration. Good bit of thinking there, and perhaps we will see the best of Majbra. I suppose the thing with him, Lewis, is he's got time on his side, as does Alamba. I mean, that's got to be the highlight of a weekend from a British perspective. He was exceptional in the Henry VIII.
Oh, yes. Unbelievable. He had the weight allowance, but he actually clocked a time 5 seconds faster than the Tingle Creek. So obviously take the weight into account, but he absolutely slammed his rivals. Only his second time over fences. His first time over fences, he hardly jumped any fences because they were all out at Exeter. So he was very much learning on the job, and he really warmed to it. And what I liked, he looked like a horse was enjoying it. Mm. You know, it was, where's that next fence? Yeah. Where's the next fence? Where's the next fence? And what impressed me, he's only four, but he's got so much scope. Yeah. He was meeting them a bit wrong, but the way he was getting over the fence is a bit like a high jumper, you know, finds a way to get over. And he was clearing by a long way. Really impressed. He's only going to get better. He maybe is a bit too bold for his own good at this stage, but I think that you know, with practice you'll learn to shorten and things like that, and he's got just a great talent. I definitely go down the Arkle route, but yeah. I do hope in the future we see him over further. Do you know what I mean? He really could be anything. Yeah. It's such a cliche, but you know, if this horse gets a chance at a trip, who knows where the limit might be?
It's one of those horses for Nick Hens, isn't he, whereby they're just so good at 2 miles, you stay there, but you just wonder how good they could be, as you say.
Yeah, you just wonder if a Shishkin and Outie or whatever went up in trip earlier in their careers. It might have looked very different, even though it looked brilliant. It still looked great what they did, but they had, I think, sure, a lot of these horses have got the capabilities to go up and trip and stay further. I think Venetia said it over the weekend, like, you shouldn't pigeonhole. Yeah. A good horse can usually do it over a range of distances, and the Lamba looked that. And we were talking about the 2 mile division. It's a shame, chase division. It's a shame, sort of, in one aspect, it's a shame Sergino might end up over hurdles this season, but it's great that Donnelly's unleashed another 2 mile chaser.
Of course. Talking of potentially going up in distance, John Bond second to Ilete Tomps. What's the future with him now? How would you see his season panning out?
Yeah, I think something like an Ascot Chase looks tailor-made, really, but I tell you what, I don't think he lost an awful lot in defeat. He turned the tables like in emphatic styles with Lode de Sud. He was the one who served it up to them going down the back. And I thought it was a great run. Maintained his record of always finishing in the first two. And I look forward to seeing what he can do over a further trip, especially at a course like Ascot, where he shined at in the past.
Yeah, agreed. We've talked a lot in the Front Page in the past about the dominance of the Irish horses and the novices and potentially what the future of British jump racing would look like, Lewis. But My Daddy Paddy's favourite for the Supreme cemented his claims of a really good performance. No drama this end. I mean, Paul Nicholls has been not sure of describing this horse as how exciting he could be, and Max McNeil as well. He was a really good winner of a winter novices hurdle at Sandown on Friday. Is it beginning to turn slowly? Are the big stars beginning to emerge, or is it too early in the season to get carried away?
Look, I've always said today's hurdles are tomorrow's chasers.
Yeah.
So it's great to see horses of this calibre coming through in British yards because they are the future. But for that to go full circle, it's going to take more seasons. But these are class acts, aren't they? Both those horses, you know, they're at the start of their career. Who knows what they're beating at this time, but both are promising. And there was more evidence of it as, say, a horse like Mac Toad on Friday for the Moors, winning the juvenile hurdle first time out. The Moors again won a listed bumper first time out of a mare at Huntingdon on Sunday. So a lot of these British yards are stacked with nice young horses. Tizzard's, Ellie Murphy, yep. They've spent, you know, from the Point and Field and Store horses. So I think it will turn, but it won't be, Cheltenham in March will still be an Irish benefit.
Okay, so a bit of positivity from Lewis. I'm in the same camp, Matt. Are you going to share the love for the British future?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're probably leaving Ben Pauling out of that as well. He had a great day at Aintree on Saturday with a double with a really impressive novice and Twig. And obviously we've got the Jukebox Man to look forward to in the King George as well. So not only is the fight back from Britain coming from your Messrs Nicholls and Henderson, the young guns are starting to come through and unleash themselves as their own powerhouses in their own right, whether that be, say, Skelton's very much there and maybe even past a few of them now. But Ollie Murphy, he just needs one or two grade one stars, and I think he'll be absolutely flying along from the incredibly high standards he sets already at the moment. As the same for Ben Pauling, who's had grade one winners and, you know, could have a real, real top-notcher in the Jukebox Man, you know, wait and see to Boxing Day. So, yeah, it's all positive at the moment. We've got to look on it that not everything in the jump season is not about Cheltenham. Yes, it's where everything matters the most at the end of the day, but we're getting there. It's been a slow recovery since the Irish domination and since COVID, really, but there are good green shoots on the way.
Yes, Matt, and before we move on, we'll talk a little bit of flat action. Of course, we've got a really big weekend coming up in Hong Kong, Matt, but your eye this Monday morning has been drawn to another very familiar name. Where have you been heading? Where have you been looking this morning, and what have we got to look forward to elsewhere?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've not been on Skyscanner looking to go over to Buenos Aires, but I've been doing a lot of digging at the weekend, and Lanfranco de Torre's, obviously Frankie de Torre, better known here, is beginning his South American farewell adventure in Argentina on Saturday in the Gran Premio Carlos Pellegrini, which I've been speaking to some sources over in Argentina, and you hopefully will be able, definitely be able to read it this week. It's their version of, they say, the King George and Queen Elizabeth Stakes and the Ark put together. San Isidro racecourse in Argentina, in the capital Buenos Aires, and say it's very much like a European turf track. It's over a mile and a half. It's worth about just over 260,000 pounds when you convert it. It's a winning you're in race for the Breeders' Cup as well. So, but I've already spoke to them. They're absolutely so excited to have Frankie going over there. It's already said it's the biggest sort of race day they have in Argentina, and they get plenty of thousands of people there already. Sort of, you know, the insane crowds you see in South American football is what they get at the race courses as well. And saying it's only been even heightened by Frankie's presence there. He has ridden in Argentina once before at Palermo, but it's first time in their big, big race. So, keep your eyes on that. Plenty to go at this weekend across the hemispheres, isn't there, with Hong Kong as well. So Ryan Moore's back, so too's Frankie on our radars, probably for that final hurrah.
Yeah, it is. It is some farewell tour, Matt, isn't it? It's all corners of the world. He's done.
There's worse places you want to go to do your retirements, isn't there?
Certainly is, and the farewell tour continues, as Matt touched on. Let's move on to a different story. This is the news of Alice Haynes, the Newmarket trainer, who announced last week that she was going to quit as the job was no longer financially viable. Announcing the news, she said, "It's a sentence I never imagined I would have to say. Stepping away from something that has shaped my days and captured my heart has been an incredibly painful decision. But the truth is that racing's current financial model does not make it viable to continue." This is someone who's been extremely successful, 56 winners last season. That was her record year since starting in 2021. She's had 27 winners this season and over £400,000 in prize money in the UK. Lewis, this is just another sign of a trainer saying, "I love racing, I love the job, we just can't make it pay." A huge worry as to how the sport continues.
Yeah, it's quite a sad story, really, James. Someone who was a rider, then did well pre-training, and then went into training herself, made an instant impact. She's only 34. Really, you know, a forward thinker. She's the sort of person, young, energetic, that we need in the sport, quite frankly. And she and Alice had come such a long way in such a short space of time. Clearly, like you say, 20 odd winners this year, it hadn't quite gone according to plan. And I guess the dilemma for her was, do I continue to swim against the tide and maybe never make any great inroads, or do I maybe call time before I put myself into financial difficulties and look for something else? And it's a really sad story, because she came across like a breath of fresh air, really, you know. Yep. a really forward thinker who was very positive, so it's sad, and it's not a great reflection on British racing, is it, really, at the end of the day? I think, having a think about this, I think it's hard when you've got no skin in the game. So if you're a first-generation trainer where you're having to rent a big yard like Kremlin Cottage, it's either got to fly or your back is against the wall. Yeah. Because it's a big yard, 100 boxes. I can't imagine what the rent would be on a place like that. It'll be a lot of money. And if the boxes aren't full and the winners aren't flying off the shelf, I can imagine it very, very quickly it can turn. I mean, she started at Cadland, which was the Ryan family's, it's quite a small yard, progressed to Mackle Place, a little bit bigger, and then took, you know, her ambition, she went for the big next step to a bigger yard. And I guess it's just hard to make the money, the finances work.
Yeah, I think it highlights a number of different areas. I mean, we obviously know that she's saying it's financially doesn't work as a trainer, but as well, I mean, owners, it's hard to get owners in, the enthusiasm from them to keep investing. And, you know, we know how hard it is to get winners. We know how hard it is generally to have runners in Britain. And with all the challenges that come with owning a racehorse, it's just another sign, isn't it, that the sport just is struggling and to make it pay in any sort of way, unless you are one of the very few lucky ones in that top bracket.
Yeah, I think luck does come into it. You need that big owner, you need that star horse, you need something to constantly keep your name in lights. And there's always someone else coming up behind you who owners do flock to. But it was a progressive profile. She was in the 50 winners, and it, like I say, it was only a little blip this season. It's British racing's loss, really.
Certainly is, and Matt, we'll come to you. I mean, one of the comments there, racing's current financial model does not make it viable to continue. I mean, when we look at the future of racing, we know about the racing tax, we've talked a bit about some of the other changes that have happened to the sport, but the future isn't necessarily, well, in 2 or 3 years' time, things are going to definitely be a lot better, so keep going ahead. You know, the future's still very uncertain looking ahead.
Massively so, and this should be a big red flag to British racing, I think, because it's not necessarily that Alice Haynes was one of the small trainers, especially in Newmarket as well. She was a burgeoning trainer, I think it's fair to say she was on that upward curve. Yeah, it's a little, and if one little blip brings down the whole operation, then Christ, so many trainers must be sailing right on the edge in the periphery. You know, those, I'm thinking the ones with 10 horses in the yard rather than 40 or 50 or whatnot. You know, and prize money levels. I've been a critique of prize money levels, especially at the lower end, for a while, and it's not matching the rates of inflation. But then you see it, the hills horses prices are going to the superfires, going for astronomical sums. It's not adding up, and the gap is just, it's getting wider, and it's being stretched like an elastic band to the point of snapping now, where you're only going to have the select few, almost like we see in the jumps game a little bit. It's the flat can't think, oh, it's not mirroring it. We do see it with Godolphin, Coolmore, Ammo. You know, we've got more organisations coming in who are just so elite and could be so dominant that the majority of the people are left just with their heads above the water. You say with the racing tax, and we've had the budget and stuff, that will come in two or three years' time, but the future is now, and the future is showing you that good trainers, a trainer that had a third at Royal Ascot in a Group 1 this year, cannot make it pay. It's massive alarm bells ringing for me.
Yeah, certainly is. We're going to move on to another story now. This comes from a special report from Stuart Ryle regarding female jump jockeys within the sport. Now, this shows that just 6.5% of jump jockeys in the top 100 are female, yet 70% of racing school students are female as well. This comes off the back of course, Rachel Blackmore's Grand National victory in 2021, high-profile success for another female rider, Bryony Frost, and the fact that racing hasn't quite catalysed on that success to emerge more female riders within the ranks. There's a number of issues that was highlighted in this piece, including stigma. But there's also calls from Jane Mangan, the RTV pundit, who says that there should be more female rider races to try and encourage promotion of female riders and to give them better opportunities. But at the same time, Paige Fuller, also at RTV's analysis and former successful jockey as well, suggests that these things may just take time, and that actually the Blackmore effect, the impact, the inspiration that she'll have given to many people, well, maybe perhaps it won't be the instant impact. It might take a few more years to evolve. But nevertheless, 6.5%, Lewis, it's in a bit of another alarm bell, isn't it, for the sport? But we want to attract female riders, especially given that 70% of those school students are female.
I think that's the worry, that we're attracting them into the sport, but the 70% isn't reflected on the race course. I mean, so there is a disconnect there somewhere. There's not a pathway to become a professional rider. There's no female rider in the top 30 in Britain or Ireland over jumps, only 6 in the top 100 in Britain and 7 in Ireland in the top 100. So it's a grave concern. I think it was Lily Pynchon who sort of thought that a stigma probably maybe did still exist, which I think the sport can't ignore. And then, like you say, there probably is going to be a delay, the Blackmore effect, because if she's inspired a younger generation, it's going to take time for that to filter through. And the example given in Stuart's piece was it took a decade or more from Hayley Turner till we saw Holly come and sort of set new standards. But I think female riders have been quite against handouts, or they don't want their own races. But I think Jane Mangan spoke really, really well, and it made a lot of sense that why not have more female-only riders? Not forever, just to get them going. Make these races attractive to owners and trainers, so then they want to enter the horses, and it's then the females who get the chance to showcase their skill, and then that when they prove they can do it, they will get the opportunities elsewhere. So we're not trying to keep males and females apart, but when they're first coming into sport, why not create opportunities for them to showcase what they can do, and crucially get the experience, and that might help. And the other thing was there's a good, I think it was Paige Fuller, who said that a lot of the power being in so few hands probably isn't helping either.
Yeah.
With opportunities and things like that. And I think she's right. Smaller businesses, as we just spoke about Alice Haynes, she wasn't a small trainer, but my point is, smaller trainers over jumps, a lot of them have fallen away from the game, and they inevitably were the ones who were giving not only female riders, but lesser established male riders an opportunity. And without these opportunities to prove yourself, your careers don't take off.
Yeah, I agree. And if you look at a lot of some of the amateur races, some of the apprentice races, some of the conditional races, as you say, it's a good opportunity for experience, but also builds a bit of connection. You know, some you suddenly got a runner in a boys' race or in a conditionals race or something like that, and you're going, okay, well, we need to look outside the box here. And sometimes those link-ups happen, and eventually things change, and someone gets a bit of a shot window. So yeah, I completely agree with Jane's idea as well, and it doesn't necessarily take anything away from the female riders. Matt, what was your verdict following this special report?
Yeah, he said that we need to make sure we're still capitalising on the Blackmore effect. As you said, the really good analysis was Hayley Turner going on to the baton being passed on to Holly Doyle in a way. We've got quite a key period now that if Lewis is right in saying if the people that are inspired by Rachel Blackmore are still just coming into racing and might be a few years away, we do kind of need another female star to fill, you know, the vacuum that's been left to keep people interests peaked in getting into racing, so we've got that conveyor belt rather than people's interest is, you know, oh, Rachel Blackmore's not riding anymore, so I'm not going to watch racing or whatnot. If you're a female viewer, I'm sure it might not be like that, but there might be a few like that. It's it's a bit better on the flat, you know, up here in North. Joanna Mason's having an absolutely terrific time of her career. It's going from strength to strength. Amy War at Jim Goldie's yard is a really, really good apprentice and getting a lot of the opportunities with Jim as well. The thing is, there's more flat racing in the North than jumps racing, so you're going to get those opportunities. I'm very much for the female rider restricted races, because it's an option. You don't have to ride if you don't want to, but having the option there is even better, and having a go, you know, that's the only way you're going to get change, is by being innovative.
Perfect. Yeah, I completely agree with you there, Matt. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you very much to Lewis, sat beside me, and Matt from York, his home in York, alongside us remotely. Do make sure to follow the Racing Post social channels and us on YouTube as well for all the action-packed stuff we've got coming up. It's, of course, Cheltenham this weekend. We'll have lots of tips for your Cheltenham weekend, and so much more over the Christmas period as well, so don't miss a thing. But thank you very much for watching along, and join us again next week on the Front Page.